So, Brian, I know we discussed quite a bit about The Penguin, the show, how great it is. But every time we talk about it, we always mention, we're always anticipating. Like, nothing? No, nothing? He didn't see that? You know what I'm saying? He didn't hear that? Whatever it is. This character, his character, the Batman, is usually in tune with what's going on. And if he finds it important enough, which this is, you're talking about the death of an entire family in one night. Nothing? We're not saying Batman should show up and investigate. I don't want to see. It's fine. We don't have to see that. Save that for the Batman. Or save that for the a teaser at the end of the season. But don't tell me that his presence isn't around. Again, Easter eggs would have done it for me. I would have been fine with that. I mean, I know they mentioned him in the beginning. I know that.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't feel enough. And we, Brian, were discussing whether or not Batman's involvement in this show in whatever capacity would ruin the experience of what of the Penguin. Your thoughts, Brian, I just want to really have people understand why I would say to someone, if they said to me, I don't want Batman around. He'd probably ruin the whole thing. And I would have a reaction to that. Because if you say that, you're not a Batman fan for me. You can't be. Because Batman is that dude. Your thoughts?
I think we opened up a whole can of worms. Because I think last time we started down the path of how much Batman would be too much Batman. And I think we settled on this idea that, well, if this really was a Batman show, it actually would kind of interfere with the character developments we're getting on the criminal side. At the same time, that led to our subsequent sort of, hey, maybe we should talk about this conversation of, what if this was, you know, an alternate universe Gotham where Bruce Wayne was killed the same night as his parents and there never was a Batman? So this show, you're seeing everything you're seeing in the show, but there is no specter of the Caped Crusader at all. How do you consume this show differently? How do you process it differently? How do you enjoy it differently? And that, I think, is what you're talking about. Because there are fans who are being drawn into this world through the Penguin. Sure, do they know that Batman, it's a Batman character? Probably. But they're not connecting with it through a lens of Batman. They're connecting with it through Colin Farrell. For us, for me, I think it's better knowing Batman's out there. Even if we're having this debate over when's he going to show up, why isn't he doing anything? I think it matters. I think it changes the propulsion of all of this. It, in a weird way, it is almost like the Thanos turn at the end of Avengers, in the sense of, you know that collision course is out there. And the interest is how we get there, what pieces we put on the board, and how things get set up for the moment where Batman and the Penguin have to go head to head for real. There's real intrigue in that. I think if you remove Batman entirely to the point you say he doesn't exist, so this entire story is just a standalone, it's not that it's bad. It's just a different genre to me. It's, like I said, it's more like watching The Sopranos, or it's more like watching parts of The Godfather. It's just a, you know, sort of, it's just a crime. It's just a standalone crime drama. But there's something about, to me, that overhang of, at some point, all of this operation has to be stopped. And we know the guy who's going to do that. And it just, to me, when I'm watching it, it, at every layer, it's like adding this extra to it, to where I'm getting excited through the lens of, oh, so this is what Batman is going to have to contend with. It just makes me enjoy what they're doing some percentage more.
Certainly, we'll probably have Penguin's involvement in Batman 2, right? Yeah. But we're focusing perhaps on other characters. There's been the mention of Hush, the Court of Owls. Will people have enough time? Because we've had plenty with Penguin. And again, Matt Reeves has done a fantastic job with his universe. He's created an alternate Batman universe that doesn't look like anything we've seen before, pretty much, I'd say. A much hardcore version, live action. Our question of the day for me is always, one of the top three is, how are they going to get out of this one? And he's done it on a couple of occasions with Batman, where he's talked to him and he's told him whatever he's needed to tell him. Not that he had to get out of it, but he told the truth and eventually that he was off of him. But we've seen that he knows who this guy is. Batman is unforgettable when you meet him. You know what I'm saying? And the fact that certainly he has a lot more things to worry about. But even the Penguin mentioned the Riddler.
Well, in a weird sense, they share their disdain for the Riddler. I mean, that's made clear in this show. So in a weird way, they are kind of on the same side of that coin. So as I've thought about this question, I can't decide whether Reeves is doing this intentionally or not, but there is an aspect of this version of the Penguin where he's very good at redirecting everyone else to thinking he's the lesser of the evils. Like, think about how he plays the Sophia relationship, right? He's the one who murdered her brother, and he actually owns that. Yeah, and obviously it does tip her over the edge, but all along the way, she's suspecting that. And he's kind of being like, well, yeah, I'm a bad guy, but what about that guy over there? Like, you know, he manages to kind of position himself so there's always a bigger priority. And I weirdly feel like if we take it from Batman's perspective, the bigger villain in this show is Sophia, not the Penguin. Like, think about the actions that have occurred. Sophia is the one who murdered all of the crime family members, right? Sophia is the one who had dudes strung up in the street. So if we assume that Batman is starting an investigation at somewhere along the way, or Gordon is starting an investigation, the Penguin's drug running operation is not going to be first on that list. Not yet. Like, not right now. I'm just, so that was the one thing where I was like, yeah, it's getting high profile, but weirdly, the thing that's most high profile is not what the Penguin's doing yet. Now, I will say his unifying of the triads and the other gangs, that's where that goes, is probably starting to get closer to making Batman pay attention. But to my point about Bob Kane Batman, that may be the whole thing about Batman 2 anyway, is that they want to reach full gang war on the street status. And that is maybe what Batman is going to have to turn his attention back to. But as I thought about it, I was like, yeah, you know, there's actually this clever thing of, similar to Batman 1, you know, Batman charges into the Iceberg Lounge and then Penguin kind of talks him down. Basically, good. Don't worry. It's all good. Yeah, like, yeah. You beat the crap out of my guys, but it's all right. Like, he has that way. And I feel like that may be, this character could make it through this whole trilogy doing that. Like, he might be the bad guy who never totally gets put away. And I think the audience would actually kind of be okay with that.
But here's the thing. One more time, just to make it clear. If this show existed without Batman, I would watch it a different way. I would watch it with, despite how good it is, there would be that thing, which we're talking about still, even knowing that he's in this world. But there doesn't seem to be, like, we used to seeing Easter eggs, right? Certain little things, right? That are like, oh, wow, yeah, that's cool. Yes. Nothing.
If I'm going to criticize, I'm going to turn around and criticize this. What I would say is, Reeves went out of his way at the beginning of the Batman to illustrate that early days Batman was causing fear among street level criminals, right? We see the symbol in the sky. We see the mugger react as if Batman's literally going to drop it and take him off the street in that moment. We see Batman unhinged beating the guy in the subway station to save that boy. Reeves really painstakingly made it clear the criminal underworld was aware of him and didn't know what to make of him other than he's a problem. Like already in year two. So when you do that and then you have this kind of operating unchecked to a certain degree, that is something that you have to resolve at some point. That's why I asked about passage of time, because I kind of was like, if all of this is supposed to have taken place within like a week following the flood, maybe. Like, I could sort of see where Batman's attention might be on more citywide problems and rescues and things. Like, we see him at the end of the movie, right?
Bruce Wayne would be more involved because of the catastrophe, right? Bruce Wayne, the philanthropist, the one that's... I would want to... Again, it's not about Batman. Bruce Wayne has to be around, too. You know what I'm saying? Some mere mention. Oh, a $20 billion investment in the... You know, whatever it is, a headline. Give me a headline. Yeah. Wayne. Yeah.
That's actually a really good point. Actually, in some ways, that's probably a better point. Yeah, some invention or tech that he's already had that somehow can like drain the city of water like in days as opposed to weeks.
In my world, Ryan, he's retrofitting the city for his work.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. So I think that's why I say, like, if this show is supposed to have taken place over months, the believability goes down. If it's days or even maybe a week or two, that's where I think you can excuse this because of what happened in Batman 1 to say, look, it is one guy and it's not Superman, right? Which is a key point. If this was Superman, we're way past believability because he'd be up there like listening and he should hear all of this, right? But because it is Batman, we're like, all right, this is a human guy. So he has limitations. It's just how far are we going to go with this before we're kind of tripping that? To draw another analogy, I find myself thinking about Heat actually when I'm watching this show, because it's kind of like, imagine watching Heat without Pacino. So if you're just seeing it as the biopic of De Niro, Sizemore, and Kilmer, it's not a bad movie, right? That's an interesting movie. But there's the urgency comes from Vincent Hanna, right? And I draw that comparison because not because Vincent Hanna and Batman are the same character, but they're a little unhinged, right? That's the idea. Like, they're the hero, but they're flawed.
Yeah.
But they're really, really good at this one thing. And so the movie's, like, momentum comes from Pacino chasing De Niro throughout the movie. So if you take the chase aspect out of it, it's still interesting, but I don't think it's as classic as it turns out to be. And that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's still interesting from the performance of De Niro and the other guys. But you'll always be missing but that other guy, man.
To this show's credit and to Reeves' credit so far, Penguin is making the Batman better, meaning the movie. It is, because it's adding context and layering to the city we were dropped into, in my opinion.
Like, yes.
To the people who are seeing this show and going back to watch the movie, which is happening. Yeah. Right? There are people who are doing it in that order, not in the order we did it. I would suspect they appreciate Gotham differently than we did when we watched the movie in the theater before we saw all this.
Yeah.
I therefore have to reserve some judgment on this until I see the Batman Part 2. Because there is a world where what we get in the Batman Part 2 elevates what we're seeing in this show. That circle keeps playing out. And so far, I don't think we've been let down. So some of your questions, some of our complaints about why doesn't he know, I still hold out the possibility that he does know, or at least tracking something that can then make us feel like, okay, not only was he somewhat aware, he had a method to why he didn't just drop out of the sky and stop the truck jacking or go hell-bent after Sophia the second the headline hit on the news that the crime family had been killed. Like, so there is that where I'm just curious to see what they do with that. or yeah. how they choose to put all this onto his radar.
Yeah. That is a good question.
That's why I say, like, there's a piece of this where, like, we're talking about it. I think we have a view. We're maybe a little bit frustrated at points, but I think there's also a wait and see we have to do that might explain at least some of why he's not more involved.
I would be disappointed that when we do see him in the Batman 2, that he makes no mention of the events of the Penguin.
I think there's almost no chance of that.
Okay.
I really do. I think there's almost no chance of that. I mean, the whole point of this thing has been a bridge. That yes. bridge has to go
true,
both
true,
ways.
True, true, true. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think they would act like, okay, we did character development on Oz, and here's Oz.
I just need to hear his breakdown. His emergency awesome breakdown. You know what I'm saying? That's what I need to see. Like, you know, at Sherlock Holmes at the end, he breaks up the whole thing down how he knew. I need to see something like that.
Well, that's the thing. I think there are clever ways to do it, right? There's, you know, he could say, like, there's been quotes in this movie, lines in this movie. He could say those back to the villain that would let you know that he was listening at points. There's probably evidence or pieces of things that, like, I don't know. Let's say he pulls out, like, a bloody bill that clearly was on the table where Sophia dropped it in VD's, and you realize, like, oh, he's known what happened in that room forensically on some level,
yes,
right?
Yes,
and
it's yes, just, yes, yes.
That's the bit. I don't think they have to be like monologues or expositions. It's just like these little things that are just like the detective was tracking this, and there was a tolerance for it that he had because I can't be everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it sort of leads into like, all right, now you guys have crossed the line. So.
Man, I wish I was part of that. I wish I was in that room writing Batman lines, you know.
Because that's what made him build this show. Huh? I have one other theory from this show based upon how we see Oz in flashback form.
Okay.
Notice how he's everywhere. Like he knows everything because he's like the cripple. He's sort of like the crippled limo driver.
Yeah.
Weirdly, like when Sophia is like talking with the journalist and like he's just standing there. Like he's kind of like the priest. He's like in confessional. Like he knows everything, right? I wonder if he knows the Wayne story. Like, I wonder if he somehow knows that, or because he doesn't know Bruce and Batman are the same person yet. But I wonder if he knows the Wayne's crooked family involvement in this and was there.
I would say he does because of the files that he took. That he only shared a piece of what he knows. So yes.
So to me, that is obvious leverage in his conversations with Batman at some point, that he inadvertently or deliberately provides information about the Waynes being dirty, and that almost keeps Batman off him for a little bit. So again, whether he knows the alter ego or not, he may somehow be like trying to save his own skin, provide Batman with information, and that information actually leads Batman to incriminate his own family, which then would make Oz valuable. So I could see it. It's just the way they're positioning him makes me think like he's almost like I said, he's just kind of like everywhere. He's like Waldo. He's like in all these scenes picking up
Speaking
info.
Speaking of Waldo, it would be interesting to see if somebody is in it, like this project of wherever there's a lot of people, so sort of especially during the day, if Wayne is standing around in his getup, hiding in plain sight, you know? To see if he's there. Like, oh, snap, he's there. You know what I'm saying? That would be dope. That would be dope. I also have a theory, Brian. I think you probably would agree. The story he told Vic about him, how he became his driver. There was somebody who was his driver before.
Yeah.
I think Penguin got rid of him.
I think that's probably right. Yeah.
I think Penguin did his own brothers in.
I think that's very possible.
And certainly, I think most people believe that Sophia is going to have his mother hostage. And he's going to do her in too, because he has to at that point, right? And he's already been given permission to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that, and he's going to use that to play Sophia, because he knows that's what he's going to do anyway. So we're going to see. The beauty of this show is that we know certain things are going to play out, how they play out and how they perform, how the result of that decision is always the thing for me, that, and the words that are used are always a huge thing for me to see how that transpires. So this show is just freaking amazing. I get it. Yes, it is amazing. But that little thing right there, man, would have just took it overboard for me about the Batman's presence. But Brian, anything else before we move on?
No, we got two episodes to go, so can't wait.
Yes. When I saw, I had not been privy to this information. I had not known anything about this information. Nothing. There was no mention of this headline. But new Godzilla movie, Brian, minus one director coming back. How much did he made this first movie for?
So the reported budget was $15 million. He said it's less. He said it was less, and they won the visual effects Oscar. First time a Godzilla movie had ever been nominated, let alone won an Academy Award.
You hear that, Marvel? You hear that, DC? Their effects at 15, whatever money they had, he'll probably get. I know I made a joke about them giving him $20 million and they're going to like make it work, because he wished he had $15 million.
That's right.
I would have been like, okay, how much more do you really need? Like, you know, at 2025 and to make other stuff work, whatever it is, they're going to give it to him. Because why? It's going to make money.
Yeah.
That is a guarantee, in my opinion. That's a high probability. Not a guarantee, but a high probability that it will make money and more money than the first one. What's going on with this, Brian?
So I think they're in a unique... This is Toho, obviously, the company that's had Godzilla since inception in Japan, announcing this. They're in a unique position, I think, in the state of the franchise. I mean, Godzilla's always been reliable for the local audience, you know, for 70 years.
Yeah.
This is the first time, I believe, they have true global crossover of a built-in audience for this next movie.
Yes.
So what I am fascinated in is, do they simply make a sequel based upon the kind of the little cliffhanger they left at the end of Minus One, where he's destroyed but starting to regrow effectively, right? There's that hint, and then the eyes, right? So you kind of have
a teaser.
If you just want to do a sequel and stay in the 1950s, you can do it. Or do you do something different? Like, does this guy coming back insist on, hey, I don't just want to do Godzilla 1, 2, and minus 1, minus 0, minus one, whatever, plus 1, whatever it is. Like,
I was curious about that. Why did he call it minus 1? Do you know?
I assumed it was because it was had to do with time, right? Like, I thought that's what it was a reference to, like T minus one, like the day before. Okay. I assume that's what I didn't see that, but I'm just saying, like, what if he says, hey, I have a different idea, like same crew, same director, but like, I don't want to make the direct.
And the execs are like, yeah, whatever.
That's my point. They're not going to say right? And the thing is, the global audience, this is the first Godzilla movie that really like made any sort of real money here in the US. In fact, it's getting re-released right now in the theaters. And like, they know they can make a little extra dollars off that. So that's why I'm just kind of curious to see what they do with it, because it's the first, and I guarantee when they release it next time, it'll be a global release, because remember, it was put out in Japan first and then kind of came here after, and then they realized they had a hit. So next time, the marketing and the release and the trailer, like that stuff's going to go differently. I think the budget increase will be, I mean, it's not going to be 150. They're not doing, they don't have those kind of resources. But I would think for a Godzilla movie, it's going to be a lot. Like, I would think I think it could legitimately be like 30 to 50.
Yes. Which is the hands of this guy. I was saying 50 right now in my brain.
Which is the hands of this guy. Well, because.
Max.
Which, yeah, because the thing is, these movies, they're not paying for Daniel Day-Lewis.
They get good
this guy got really good performances, but it's not like those actors were getting paid $20 million.
The star is Godzilla. That's
right.
It.
And they know that. They know that.
No, don't pick up no calls. Tell The Rock, stop. Go ahead.
So that's what I'm fascinated, because like I said, this is going to be an event when it happens. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people on stateside will be there day one to watch this in the theater, because they understand this is a movie that benefits from the theater. So yeah. I think it's great news. It probably was inevitable. Hopefully he got paid a little something for his work and winning the award. And hopefully that he got a raise, but I can't wait. I cannot wait to see what they do. They've actually managed to make this IP serious. Like, he managed to take an IP that had gone from very serious in Inception to incredibly silly.
Yeah.
And successfully silly, quite honestly. And he's managed to bring it back to truly serious. Now, you could say, like, Gareth Edwards made it somewhat serious in the U.S., but that's silly. We're back to silly in the U.S.
Yeah.
We're having fun with it, but we're back to silly with Godzilla Kong and what they're doing. So this guy is making, like, the true drama within Godzilla. Can't wait. I think it's great. I think it's great. And by the way, in the categories of things we wished and if onlys and whatever, I know it can't happen and I'm not going to be bitter and I'm sure I'm going to be excited when the movie comes out, but I'm just saying, what if this guy was directing the Voltron movie? Can you imagine what he could do with a Voltron Robies combat and character development of the crew with what he did in Godzilla Minus One?
I've always said I would have loved to seen it, even though we already kind of seen it with Guillermo del Toro and what he's done. How different would it be? Perhaps not so different enough that people wouldn't go out to check it out. But yes, in the hands of this guy, Toho, his name?
Well, Toho's the Toho's company. The company that that makes it. But so I just Takashi Yamazaki. Yamazaki. Takashi Yamazaki.
Sound like a rapper. Takashi Yamazaki. Yamazaki-san. Some dude, I was reading an article and he referred to him, because I think he was Japanese, he called him Yamakazi-san, or just because, I don't know. What is the significance of saying san at the end of the person's last name?
It's like sir, isn't it? It's like a sir, and it's like, because it's
Okay. Got it. Yeah, so Takashi Yamakazi, it's a dope name. In his hands, they would give him a... Like, imagine we're giving you $150 million to do this movie. He would go crazy.
I don't think he would spend it all. I think he literally would, like, do the movie and come back and be like, oh, I spent, like, 70 of it.
Here's the thing why he would. Because he would have to create a new world. It wouldn't be based in Japan or next... You know what I'm saying? He would have to create a new world.
Yeah, Eris. I mean, if you create Eris.
Yes. So... Yeah. He'd make it work. But yeah, let us know in the comment section below what you guys think of the second, the Godzilla Minus One will be coming back by the same people. And he's getting the treatment of do whatever you want. Because that's what I would do. I'd be like, hey, do whatever you want. Let's make sure we maintain contact. Let me know where you're at, blah, 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 blah. And we good.
Yeah. Just don't introduce the sun.
Oh, God. That's what I'd be doing if I was at the theaters, if I saw that kid. Just gliding down the stairs and getting the hell out of there. I don't want to ever see that kid. I think that was the first, when I first saw that kid, I was like, as a kid, I was like, what is this? This is garbage.
It looks so bad. Even like the suit they made was so bad. Yeah. Got these funny eyes. And like,
my God, man.
Yeah.
Next up, Chris Nolan.
Oh, my God.
You get in the room and he's telling you his pitch. You're like, what are we doing, yo? I'm like, yo, what are we? Can you? What? But he does. That's what he does.
Yep.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
What are you gonna say? No.
This is going to make a lot of money.
Reluctantly, they'll give him the money to do this, but he'll get it. Because I don't know what I don't know what this is, Brian.
All right. First off, look, I know there's people out there that think Chris Nolan's overrated and they critique some of his storytelling and characters and blah, 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 whatever. Like, F off. Like, this guy is, to me, why I go to the movies. And I'm laughing because this idea is as exciting to me as it is ludicrous. So to put this in perspective, the guy is the reigning best director. Okay. So assuming all of these reports are true, and there's no reason to think they're not, there's actually an FX company that kind of pseudo confirmed it. He's doing the directorial equivalent of what Nicolas Cage did in the 1990s. So Cage won Best Actor for Leaving Las Vegas. He turned around and used his Best Actor to make The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off in 3 straight years, which I don't care how crazy that dude is. I will always love him for doing that, for being like, I'm at the top of the prestige mountain. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make 3 hilariously awesome action movies in a row to please the people. And I don't care about prestige at all when I'm doing that. I'm not saying Chris Nolan's going all in on that. But if you make Oppenheimer make $1 billion and you win all sorts of awards off that, and your idea is to take an 80s super helicopter movie and update it, that is the boss's boss thing you could possibly do. So the report is he is doing an aerial helicopter future cop movie inspired by the 1983 Roy Scheider super helicopter movie Blue Thunder. And he's already got confirmed Matt Damon and Tom Holland as his 2 lead pilots. He reportedly went to the IMAX company a year ago with ideas on how to change their tech. And IMAX on their earnings call confirmed the tech is done and they gave it to him. So he's going to do something we've never seen before in the air.
Which is the hook.
Using helicopters in IMAX. And we're getting this movie in July of 2026. Like, this is incredible. I mean, this is the only guy that would be crazy enough to do this and be like, yeah, that period of we talk about 80s IP.
Yeah.
One we have not talked about is like, remember that phase of like Knight Rider, Airwolf, Blue Thunder, Firefox, where everything was like a super vehicle?
Yeah.
Nobody's tried to update any of that.
Well, the Knight Rider did try to come back.
Yeah, but that was a terrible thing on NBC. The car was terrible. The lead was terrible. They didn't understand how to update it. And even that show was like 10 years ago that they tried.
Yes.
My point is, nobody has really like accessed. Really, the A-Team update was the only movie from that period that anyone attempted to pull from.
In movies. Okay.
This guy's like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do.
I mean, they did Miami Vice, right? Too.
Totally agree, but there's no tech and there's no like vehicle. I'm saying like we're talking about like some futuristic.
Got it.
Car, boat, plane. Gotcha. There was a period where we had a lot of that. I loved Airwolf. I'm a huge Airwolf fan.
Super helicopter doesn't sound.
I know the show is much, to me the show is much better than it deserves to be, and the effects are campy at times, but some of them are cool. And
wasn't there a show back in the '80s that had there was this like blue there was this dude that he was like electric, he was a blonde guy, and his body was like some sort of energy, and he used to get in this car that was like lit in blue or something like that. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that one. No.
Wow. Somebody in the comments got to let me know, because I know I remember seeing something like that. It was back a long time ago. Goodness. But go ahead.
So I loved Airwolf. I watched Knight Rider too. But just that idea that there was this advanced technology prototype that could be used for good purposes or for bad purposes. And we would build this whole show or this movie around that. And Blue Thunder was that. Like, so Blue Thunder was a it was for the police, but it was built by the military, and it was supposed to like help with peacekeeping, but in reality they wanted to use it to actually just sort of perpetrate mass killings from above. Mm-hmm. And then sort of Roy Scheider is the pilot who kind of gets into the conspiracy of it all. And his junior sidekick was Daniel Stern from the Home Alone movies. The villain was Malcolm McDowell. So it's not a remake. The indications are it's not a remake. It's the motif.
Yes.
I think the other thing that makes me excited and why Nolan is the only person, one of two people I think that could really credibly do this, is if you think back to in Dunkirk, the aerial scenes are among the best scenes of that movie.
And yes, I've heard that.
Even some of the shots he did in Dark Knight Rises where he's using the Batwing, actual life-size Batwing that he's flying through the city as he's shooting it, like that's the early version of this, right? I think he's basically looking at that and saying the technology is, I can get the technology to a place where I can do something different in the air, in IMAX, along those lines. I think it's amazing. I mean, the only other director I said I think we know could do this would be Joe Kosinski, because he did it in Maverick, right? So it'd be the idea like aerials that blow you away.
Yes.
The other thing, by the way, Summer of Tom Holland is going to happen, because this movie is third week of July in 2026. If I'm correct, that's right around the same time the next Spider-Man movie is coming out. And it's supposed to be when the next Avengers movie is coming out, right? Same year, same summer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Holland could have all of those within like a 3-month time period.
One thing we were talking about when you sent this headline, and the thing that caught my attention was the IMAX tech. And one thing that sort of jarred my thinking into hoping some of that talk would have been applied to something like Superman, right?
Yes, go ahead, say it. Yeah.
We've seen, and I've said this before, if you've been watching this channel, that they haven't done anything we haven't seen really that's impressive in terms of flying abilities. The perspective hasn't changed. The view hasn't changed. Although in Black Adam, there were some things that they did that were really cool.
I think Zach did a nice job in a couple spots. I think the scene where he flies for the first time is that's my single favorite.
Yeah. That's a lot of people's favorites.
I actually liked within that he has the video game perspective at points where you're kind of, the camera's appearing to be on Superman's shoulder and you're seeing him kind of turn and fly. I like that. And I liked his fight. The first time he showed it, and they shouldn't have showed it in the trailer, but his fight with Zod in the air where he was punching him.
Yes.
That was those two things to me were innovations for live action Superman. But I agree with you that the physics of a man flying, a humanoid figure flying, have not been perfected yet on screen. It always still, to me, like I've always said this about Marvel, their flights to me never look like they have enough physics or enough resistance. There's something about the way the characters move when they're CGI flying, where I'm just like, this.
I like some of the Submariner flying. I thought it was dope.
Some of the what?
Submariner?
Yeah, I guess that's right. Because is that a true flight, or is he kind of like super leaping, gliding?
Because he's stopping in midair.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, he's stopping in midair. So his flight was different than, and that's what I mean. His flight was different because he wasn't a cape, but he wasn't like, you know what I'm saying, doing all that stuff. It was different.
But even like, you know, even dating back to even like original Iron Man, which I think is probably one of the better ones Marvel did in this regard, like there's just something about like when they're in air, in flight, we're just like, there's something about the way that is moving that doesn't feel like there's an object there. There's no gravity to it. It's just too easy for them to like zip around and do things. So I'm curious.
Shout out to the best superhero landing in Superman Returns. That was the best. That was dope. I was like, damn, that was.
Same example. I thought the airplane rescue in that, there's some stuff he does that's cool.
Yes.
And that's new.
Yes,
and that's different.
Yes,
so
yes, yes.
I think we've made progress, but you're right. I don't think we've seen the one where we're just like start to finish. We haven't seen the Top Gun Maverick version of that yet, where you're just like, this is not like anything I've ever seen. So we'll see if Gunn has that. Now, Gunn visually has done other things non-flying that have made us pay attention. He's very good at staging and blocking that stuff. So we'll see if he can pull it off. But you're right. I mean, Nolan, Kaczynski, those are the guys. Where, I mean, I wanted Kaczynski to do Superman before Gunn took it over. Like, for that reason, I wanted to see the aerials be everything they could be.
Yeah.
Would it be $1 billion? I don't know. I mean,
I don't think so, Brian.
But like, he's not going to budget it that way. And it'll be such an event. And like, that's what I mean. Like, it'll be like an easy 600 for him. And
yes. And but he already has you with IMAX tech, new tech, seeing something we've never seen before. And that's where you go to the movies.
He gives you that every time. That's the thing, is whether you love or hate the movies, every single time you go, you know that he's going to give you something different. And to me, that's the responsibility of a filmmaker. It's like one of the number one things.
Yeah, let us know in the comment section below what you guys think of Chris Nolan's decision to make Airwolf, Blue Thunder, Super Helicopter. Super Helicopter sounds crazy. Cop spy movie with new IMAX tech. I mean, whether you dismiss it as like, oh boy, whatever. When you see it, the trailer, whatever it is, he will have your attention. That's all 100%. I got to say about that. Last thing, we have Garrett Dillahunt joining Lanterns, Brian. Who is he and who's he playing?
So this also came after we got the formal confirmation of something you and I had talked about, which was Kelly MacDonald was also formally announced as playing a sheriff in the role. So Dillahunt is playing a cowboy type character, quote, self-righteous, conspiracy-minded man who masks ruthless ambition behind charming and calculated facade. So that sounds like a bad guy. That sounds a little bit like he's playing something of a villain.
Something of a villain, certainly not the main, you know, the bigger picture guy, but he's, again, and this is something I mentioned before, that we'll probably have characters who are the opposition to whatever the Lanterns are trying to discover.
You would know him. Like, he's been on TV for, gosh, 30, 35 years. He's always like that guy. He's always like the fifth or sixth supporting character, but he's been in a ton of stuff that people will have seen. Like, he's in No Country for Old Men, for example. He's in Looper. He's in 12 Years a Slave. Like, okay. This is the point. He's been in a ton of different things, never as a star. And he's also been, you know, guest starring on TV shows that you've seen, everything from Law and Order to NYPD Blue to Deadwood to CSI. Like, he's done everything.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Quintessential, like, supporting type character, but never the lead. The one other thing that came out of these two castings was they said the town, right? So you have a cowboy character and you have a sheriff. The town in question is in the heartland somewhere. So what has been dropped was the trigger for this show is there's some kind of murder, which I'm guessing will have some sort of supernatural tie-in, that occurs in a heartland town, and it draws Hal to investigate along with, or then maybe he picks up John Stewart somewhere along the way. So we're getting these little nuggets of how they're stage setting this. But the hook is supposedly murder mystery in Heartland America. That just happens to have Green Lanterns doing the investigations. In addition to Kelly MacDonald, who obviously as the sheriff will be doing the investigation as the local cop.
Well, we always ask the question, and many people have been asking the question, like, why are they on Earth? What's so special about what they have to discover there? And that is a huge question that'll be answered really close to the end, right? And that should lead towards whatever else that they're wanting to show us after that.
Do you want them to be in space at any point in this first season? Like, do you feel like it's necessary? Long run, yes. I'm saying
yes, long run, yes.
Season one specifically, do you need it?
Because, now that I know that we're getting an origin story of John Stewart, it makes more sense that it's on Earth to me right now, as I was thinking about it. before we really take him someplace that he has to sort of ease into, right? And being a new recruit, I would suspect it makes more sense to do that and have us wait for the bigger stuff in theaters or whatever the case may be. But towards the end, I hope they leave the planet, right? Or they meet something has to happen toward the end that changes the environment. Because again, this is Green Lantern. Whatever that may be, do we see him in full costume? There's a lot of questions here, Brian, because what does a dope Green Lantern show looks like? Right? For a lot of people, that means a lot of different things. But collectively, we have to have the ingredients that everybody's going to like. And that's difficult with lanterns.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You have the ingredients for why they should start on Earth. I mean, clearly Earth will be part of Hal's sector, right? I mean, he's the Lantern Legend, as they said. So clearly he watches over Earth. So he would probably stop there pretty regularly. You have probably the whatever unusual paranormal aspect of this murder mystery that's going to draw him in, like why he would have to go there to investigate. We need a catalyst for that. It can't just be like a random killing. And then there's the question of how much of John's origin are we getting? Is it Hal going solo into this mystery and then realizing the mystery has also somehow intertwined with John Stewart pre-Lantern and then leads to him being recruited in? Has he already just been recruited in and this is his first mission and then we might get flashbacks to how he got there? There's a lot of different ways they could stage that that I think work. But to your point, I don't think they need to go off world in this season. I don't. They probably need to refer in some way to an existence of the sector, like something else. I don't know how much we need to see. Maybe it's a teaser scene. Maybe it's like an Easter egg. But I mean, we do have to get a sense of world building beyond Earth. But I don't know that they have to like suit up and fly into
It would be more conversation stuff that happens.
Yeah.
Especially being Hal Jordan being the legacy, the legend that he is, he obviously seen a lot.
So that would be the one way that you would see space, to my mind, is him flashing back and giving you exposition. And maybe that's their cheat code for making people happy and showing people who want to see fully suited Lantern wielding full Lantern powers. Like, here, we can show you how well we can do it in flashback, but we don't want it to be the centerpiece of the story we're telling just yet. I don't know. That may be because it is hard to credibly say to the non-comic book audience, this dude is the guy, unless you show why he's the guy. So he has to have a scene where you're kind of like, he can do things other people can't. And it can't just be like him like flashing his ring and doing a little something in the Heartland. He's got to do something like meaningful to make us respect him, right? We know that as a comic book fan, but like the general audience has to respect him as the mentor figure for Aaron Pierre.
It is going to be interesting what this lands, because again, we don't know really what a good Lantern series is going to look like. I am excited for the attempt of giving us a standard, I guess, of what that is, right? Or a bar? Because this is really like...
I do think they are competing against, to the extent people remember that movie, they don't remember it fondly. They remember it being stupid. They remember it being silly, right? So like you are competing with that. Like you have to, if you're going to make a serious drama show, you have to make people buy into that in a way that, you know, if we draw the parallel, when you say like, I'm making a show about the Penguin, there's a lot of people who associate like, wait, you're building a crime drama around a dude with a monocle and an umbrella. You know what I mean? Like there's that association for people. And then you get into the world and you realize, oh, it's been fundamentally altered and it's believable. And I get it. Well, it's still retaining spirit of Penguin. That's what they have to do, I think, with this.
Yeah. Let us know in the comment section below what you guys think of, Garrett Dillon Hunt joining the Lantern series, and what sort of excitement. Obviously, there's a bunch of excitement for the Lanterns. But like we've said, we don't know what to expect. We don't know what this is going to look like. We have our templates. True Detective, they keep mentioning, you know, what this is sort of going to look like. So we have...
I said X-Files. We've talked about 48 yes. hours. I mean,
yes,
I
think, yes, yeah. yes, yes, yes. So there are definitely the templates, but that extra ingredient of lanterns changes so much. Changes so much that we don't know what this is going to look like. Thankfully, you know, the people that are involved in this are heavyweights when it comes to getting hardware. And not necessarily getting them, but just being always in the conversation. So there's a lot to look forward to. And I'd like to know what you guys think of what you guys think this is going to be.
Do you think he says the oath?
No. No. But knowing James Gunn, he's probably in the room. There's that discussion that's probably happening. Does he say the oath?
I think it's
I think you have your camp
yeah.
that say yes and your camp that says no. I think the camp that says no is going to win. The camp, I know James Gunn is in there probably. I feel like James Gunn is one of those that says yes, let him say it.
I mean, it's a hallmark of the canon, but it doesn't really fit the motif of the show they're trying to make, I don't think. That's the thing.
No, it's not I don't think we're in a position where the Lanterns are them being in danger. I don't see them being in danger or high danger of them. Something happened to them. I don't think we're getting to that point. I think you say that oath when things is like at the bottom.
So it's funny. I was just thinking about this while we're talking about it. Could you infer that he says it without having him recite it? So, for example, could you end the season with like a fade out scene where he's starting to say it? Aaron Pierre, but you don't hear him say the rest of it. So, to draw a movie parallel, if you remember the end of Clear and Present Danger, Harrison Ford as Jack Ryan goes in front of Congress to testify, and it's inferred he's going to spill the beans on all the bad dealings of the White House and National Security Agency, but you don't actually hear him say it. All they do is they just say, "Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing?" And he says, "I do." And the movie ends. Cut the black. Yeah. So you know what he said. You just don't hear him say it. Is there a possibility, like, we see the lamp, like the physical lantern, and like it's set up, and you kind of see Aaron Pierre kind of like he's starting to, and then they cut it.
I would want to hear it say under heavy, heavy, heavy duress. Because in order for him to become a full Green Lantern, he has to say it, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So in the comics lore, for them to... He can't really get there from here. He has to do it at some point. Yeah. But if the idea is he's a really new recruit, he might be able to sort of be a pseudo-Lantern in this season without really being... That makes the show more interesting if he's not fully powered up, right? And he's kind of struggling with that while Hal has already said it. He doesn't have to say it again. Yeah.
Very interesting decision.
The show goes on! Yeah!